B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby.
Shiba, shiba. Shiba, shiba. Shiba, shiba.
Let me in.
Shiba, shiba.
I want to be closer to you.
Shiba, shiba.
Open up your soul.
Shiba, shiba.
Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your love.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. The holidays are in full swing, and I know a lot of you are white knuckling it even as we speak, but you don't have to because there's so many things to enjoy in this world that it's not even funny. It's actually quite sweet and lovely. One of the things that you are allowed to enjoy in this lifetime is a thing we like to call ruthless. For those of you who don't know, here to talk about ruthless, I'd like to welcome the director, Diane McBride. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about ruthless. I mean, given that we're in the midst of holidays, something like ruthless actually appeals to me just for the title alone.
Right? Yeah, it's like the anti shows that you might go see every year, or if you know your family decides to take you to things that maybe you have seen many times, come see this show. So that's not a knock on Christmas Carol, by the way. I've seen Christmas Carol a zillion times and I'll go every year. So I wasn't trying to diss any of my fellow shows.
So what is Ruthless?
Ruthless is a musical that started in 1992 in New York. And, it is if the bad seed, all about Eve and Gypsy had a love child, and that love child was murderous.
Oh, I'm so there. Okay. So who wrote Ruthless? And just tell me as much as you can without giving too much away.
Sure. This is written by Marvin Laird, I believe, and Joel Paley. And it was a little off-Broadway show, which was at the Players Theater in New York. And the way that this show I sort of came about and the way that I understand it is they were just really interested in writing this sort of over-the-top camp musical. Mm-hmm. And it's a small cast. It's only six characters. And one of the characters is generally played in drag, the character of Sylvia St. Croix. So it's always been that way because one of the writers in the beginning, I can't remember if it was the writer or who it was, this guy named Joel Vig, I don't know how he was attached to it, but he ended up playing that role. And so even though it traditionally wasn't written to be in drag, it ended up always being played in drag. So every time that I've ever seen it or I've known about it, it has been done in drag. No, it wasn't Joel Vig. That's who played it in Los Angeles. I'm getting all confused, but I know that the guy who played it originally, it was done in drag. And so that's been the way that it's been done. And so we have the fantastic Conrad Frank, who a lot of people might know as Katya Smirnoff-Sky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I saw it years ago in San Francisco with Donna Sache playing that role. So, you know, you want your very best drag performers in this part because it's just delicious and over the top. And then generally the role of Tina, who is the bad seed character, it can be played either way. It can be played by a woman,
mm-hmm,
who is of very small stature, or it can be played by a child. So in our production, we have a very small woman.
Okay.
Melissa Mambois, who's just a terrific performer and a powerhouse triple threat. And then there's, you know, the show, it's a really interesting show in the way that it sort of takes this little turn that the first act is really a lot about sort of the rise of Tina and mm-hmm. her star power. And then act two takes a completely different sort of twist, and it becomes about her mother.
Okay.
So I don't want to give away too much because there's secrets within secrets within secrets in this mm-hmm. play. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of part of the fun.
That just sounds incredible. How did you, like, did you choose the play or did the play choose you?
No, I did not choose the play. What ended up happening, this is sort of a cool story, is, you know, I was at New Conservatory for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I used to be a teacher there and an actor in the 90s. I started in 1995. And I hadn't been back to New Conservatory since sort of the mid-2000s, but I'd always stayed really close friends with Ed Decker, mm-hmm. who was the artistic director there. And when he was deciding the season, and they were sort of coming out of the pandemic, everybody was pretty much deciding that maybe this year they'd have a full season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of us directors and actors, you know, finally our phones started to ring. It's been a strange time. So Ed decided that he wanted to bring back some people that he thought had been part of the New Conservatory family for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a Zoom meeting, and it was just terrific to connect to him with him, because I have been such a fan of Ed for so long, and he's just been a terrific mentor to me. I think he's been a terrific, just a terrific artist for San Francisco in general. New Conservatory Theater has just done such amazing work with new artists and youth aware shows and all the stuff that they do there. So he called me and we had a conversation, and he just said, I can't think of anybody else that should direct this, which I was grateful for. I'm glad when people think over the top, ridiculous. Those are the shows we should give Diane McBride. So
I love that. I love that. And it's a musical. That's the best part.
Correct. Correct.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's a lot of music in this musical too. It's a we like to call it a very big little show.
Okay. So you mentioned, so is it just the two actors, or are there other people?
No, there's six characters in this play. There's Sylvia St. Croix, who we were talking about earlier, is going to be played by Conrad Frank or Katya Smirnovsky.
Mm-hmm.
Judy Denmark, which is the mom, which will be played by the fantastic Mary Kalita.
Mm-hmm.
Tina Denmark, which we were talking about, the young girl who's the
bad seed.
All sorts of the bad seed, which will be Melissa Mambois. Miss Thorne, who is the third grade teacher. They are putting on a production of Pippi in Tahiti. Played by Haley Lovegren. Louise Lerman, which will be played by the fantastic Luca Troutman, who was seen in Fun Home over at Berkeley Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And our other fantastic character, who is this theater critic that comes in at the end, which I don't want to tell you too much about because there's some fun stuff in there as well. And her name is Lita Encore.
Nice.
So we have just a really great time with this cast.
And how long is the run?
We actually have a long run. We run from December 1st all the way through January 7th. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we take a little week off right before Christmas because Conrad, who's playing Sylvia St. Croix, who never stops working, by the way,
mm-hmm.
He's going to do his own Christmas show on our set.
Very nice. I think I'm going to try and get him on a little later in the month of December. So that's awesome. So when are the show times? Does it run, like, how long does it run?
Well, let me look this up for you.
Okay.
I wanted to say that Lita Encore, the theater critic, is played by Jackie DeMuro. I didn't mean to not mention the fabulous Jackie DeMuro.
Okay.
Let's see. We play New Conservatory shows are Wednesdays through Sunday nights. So we preview for a week. We preview starting on the 1st. And we officially open on the 9th of December. So we have about a week of previews if you want to come see things change. And then we officially open on the 9th and close on January 7th. And we have, we just take that little week of Christmas off. So we take a little break from the 17th to the 27th, but come on down to the New Conservatory and see Katya. We did a pride party the other night, and so we were seeing some of the shows that were at NCTC, and I got to catch a little bit of Katya's show, and it's just a hoot.
Very cool. So if people want to get tickets, can they get them at the box office? Can they get them online?
They can go to nctcsf.org, and it's right there on the front. And it's going to, I love the plug that they have. I'm looking at the website and it says shameless, hilarious, high camp.
Nice.
So, right. Yeah. And we also have this really cool thing on Wednesday nights. We have happy hour is a drag. So because they have a bar downstairs at New Conservatory on Wednesday nights, the whole thing is hosted by a drag sensation.
Oh, cool.
So, and there's different, I think there's different drag performers that come in to do that each Wednesday night, which I think is going to be amazing.
Okay. And so you have this, Ruthless has a nice long run. So do you have any plans after that? Or are you just going to, try and relax?
Me, Diane McBride, personally?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't think that you can be in this business and not have your work lined up. So I'm going to take Christmas off. And then I'm a professor at Las Positas College out in Livermore. And so we'll be doing production of She Loves Me out there. And after that, I am going to be directing a yet to be named concert for 42nd Street Moon.
Oh, very nice.
And then I'm on hold for things and auditioning for things right now. So, you know, you try to work about, right now I'm booked all the way through, what is that, May? So I'm trying to figure out what my summer is going to be next year.
Got it. I know with the anyone in the performing arts, it's feast or famine.
Right. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Well, Diane McBride, it's been a pleasure to talk with you about Ruthless. And if there was one thing you wanted to leave our listening audience with, what would you say about Ruthless?
I'm going to read you the little plug that we have on our website.
Okay.
It says, shameless, hilarious, high camp. Tina Denmark is an adorable and talented 8-year-old with a tiny murderous streak. When the lead role of Pippi Longstocking in the school play is up for grabs, she knows she'll get the part, even if it means leaving a few bodies along the way. With its stop-at-nothing satire of beloved Broadway shows and old Hollywood classics, this cult hit musical is a deliciously diabolical look at fame, ambition, and the perils of musical theater.
Excellent.
That's what that's about. Come see us.
You had me at murderous child. So once again, Diane McBride, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. Check out Ruthless at the New Conservatory Theater Center. Coming up next, we are going to talk about The Velveteen Rabbit. So stay tuned.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. As promised, we're going to talk about The Velveteen Rabbit, which I am one of those people who's actually never read it. So I'm really excited to talk about it. So here to talk, I'd like to welcome Brenda Way. Hello.
Hello. I'm happy to hear that you're a virgin audience. That sounds exciting.
I am. I've only ever read like a plaque that has one of the quotes about the
you know, people use the quotes in their weddings all the time because the piece is about unconditional love. So it's perfect.
Okay. So you're doing this piece. So tell me a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Well, I'm a choreographer and I've had a dance company with some friends of mine. We were a collective for many, many years, 53, I think now.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, I have four kids and my partner Katie had one and Kimi has one. So we always wanted to do something that really engaged young people in the dance form, mm-hmm. and something that was meaningful. And we found, and Katie decided to do this about 30 years ago. And we've been working on it ever since. We have regular seasons of adult work, mm-hmm. but children have always been a major interest in ours. For our school, we have 1,000 young people taking class. But this production, which also includes 10 children from our school, has been a real heart center of the organization for many years.
Now, what's the name of the school?
ODC School.
Oh, okay.
It's in the Mission, and we have about 15,000 students, of adults and all ages, but our children's program is very important to us.
Wow, and you've had that children's program for how long?
Well, the children's program, we've had it since I don't know, since 98 or something like that.
Wow. Wow. And so what's the age range? Like, what's the youngest? What's the oldest?
Well, we've had classes for parents with babes in arms. And I think, you know, family classes, what's better than to dance together with your baby? I think the perfect start to a life.
Okay.
And also, they go as old as 92. We have a good senior program. I mean, listen, I've been around a long time. We need a senior program. Anyway, so we grew up in a time when it was really in the zeitgeist that everybody should dance. Oh, it was very participatory. It was the late 60s. And so that idea that it should not be an exclusive form, but it should be an inclusive form was what we were founded on.
And then how did your partner settle on the Velveteen Rabbit?
Well, she looked at a lot of properties and books, and this one has, well, the story is great. It's since you haven't read it, I'll give you a little synopsis. It's about a boy who is given a rabbit. Mm-hmm. A stuffed rabbit, and basically he loves the rabbit, and eventually he gets sick and the rabbit has to be tossed, but the rabbit becomes real. And so the real story of this book is that you become real with age and wisdom, and that loyalty leads to age and wisdom. So unconditional love, so these are the stories we wanted to convey to our children. Anyway, and doing it with song and dance and music and beautiful visuals seems a good way to do it.
Okay, so is there spoken word or?
Yes.
Okay.
We have everything in it. So Jeff Coyle, who is a fantastic actor, is the narrator. And okay. He tells the story. And Brian Wildsmith, who's done many children's books, designed the costumes. And Gina Leishman and Rindy sings the songs, Rindy the actor. So there are songs with words too. And then there's dance. So it's theater and dance and music and visual arts. So it's the whole package.
So what kind of response do you get from the kids since you've been doing it such a long time?
Well, you know, a terrific response. What we're seeing now is the parents of children who were in it. The parents are coming back. The kids are coming back as parents is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, very
sweet. So it's generational at this point, which is totally exciting. But I did have one really interesting experience. One year we had, make this available to third graders across town of underserved schools. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of experience with third graders. One year there was a class that came of fifth graders. And, you know, by fifth grade, hey, they're getting pretty cool.
Yeah.
So they're like sitting in the front row with their arms crossed, you know,
sure.
Hello, go ahead, prove it. And by the end, they were their younger selves. So that was very gratifying. In other words, it touched something in them. They didn't need to hide anymore.
Oh, I love that.
That meant a lot to me.
Yeah, because 10-year-olds are pretty like, no, I'm not anymore.
I'm cool.
Yeah. Yeah. This is for babies, not for me.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, of course, we have a lot of grandparents bringing their kids too, because you know, we need all the support we can get as grandparents, right? Don't forget age and wisdom.
Yeah. So when kids come to see the show, do you ever get kids that see it and now they want to be dancers or actors or performers?
Well, I do. I guess kids do sign up for the school after they see it. Also, of course, just in the lobby, they're doing the dances. I mean, you know, they're little sponges and they come out and they do the moves. And for our school shows, we have a seventh inning stretch for the intermission, so we don't let them all run wild.
Sure.
And we do some of the movement from the piece and ask them for ideas, and we do something on the stage. So we really encourage their embodying their experience of going to the show. And so many of these kids, it's the first show ever.
Oh, okay. So does that mean when you're doing dances in the Velveteen Rabbit, you're choreographing with an eye for children being able to do it? Or
No, absolutely not. Kids will try anything.
Oh, okay.
No, we actually really wanted to make sure we did not speak down to the children. It's probably the hardest dance that we have in our repertory.
So really?
For one thing, there are about 42 different roles and the 10 dancers play them all. So that's a challenge.
Wow.
but really that they, that we want to show them dancing at its most exciting.
Now you talk, let's talk about costumes. Because you say Velveteen Rabbit, I kind of imagine a giant bunny costume.
You got it. There's a giant bunny costume.
Excellent.
And the Nana, there's a Nana in the story, and she is a two-story high Nana, so that the rabbit looks proportionally like a rabbit, like a story.
Wow. Now, you don't know this about me, but I have a kind of a fondness for the random appearance of people in giant bunny costumes. So like I have a collection of movies where like a giant bunny costume just randomly appears, and I'm just,
Okay, that is hilarious. Well, you definitely need a front row seat.
So when does it play? How long does it play?
It starts on the December 2nd and 2nd and 3rd. And then that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there are school shows and public shows. And that following weekend, there's another two performances. 2nd and 3rd, 9th and 10th.
2nd and 3rd, 9th and 10th. And are those during the day, in the evening?
They start at 2 o'clock. I'm actually looking at my phone now.
Okay.
2 o'clock shows. And the weekday shows are 11.
Okay.
So the same Friday at 11, and the weekends are 2.
And you mentioned that you're doing school shows. So is it that they already know about it, or let's say a school hears about your?
Oh, well, here's the thing. We have a Buddies for Bunnies program that we fund so that we can provide these shows free of charge. So we do fundraising all year round for this. And then schools that are interested get in touch with us, or we have a roster of schools we get in touch with. So if people would be interested for next year, they can get in touch with us.
How would they go about doing that?
Call ODC, and I'm sure everybody has a phone attached to their arm, and they can see what the number is.
Okay. So one more time for our listening audience, when and more importantly, where for the Velveteen Rabbit?
Okay, December 2nd and 3rd at Yerba Buena Gardens, Velveteen Rabbit, 2 o'clock. The following week, there will be school shows on Wednesday and Thursday, an open show on Friday at 11 at Yerba Buena. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday and Sunday, the 9th and 10th at 2 o'clock, another round of shows.
And
at Yerba Buena.
And all ages appropriate from babe in arms on up?
Yeah, on up. Youngsters of 90, come on down.
Excellent. Well, Brenda Way, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Marilyn.
All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. The Velveteen Rabbit, which I hope I get to see, because giant bunny, that's
giant bunny. It's all for you.
Giant bunny. So we'll be back with the people from the library. I have a library needs to today after this brief musical interlude. Thank you.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we simple secret of the plot. It's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make two lovers a friends.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco, and it's the last Monday of the month, and you know what that means. It means I have a librarianista du jour, and this librarianista, his name is Eric Zaya. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what do you do at the library, and which branch do you work at?
Okay, well, I work at the main library. I'm the interlibrary loan coordinator for the San Francisco system, and that's a service where we borrow and lend materials outside of the San Francisco system. So if a patron is looking for something that our library doesn't own, we can attempt to obtain it from another library system somewhere else in the United States and have it sent to us, and then we lend the material to the patron.
So wait a minute. So if there's like a book or a CD that I want to check out, I can do it that way?
We don't do audiovisual material, so CDs and DVDs are not available. But yes, book material, people are looking for articles that are from magazines we do not carry, and we'll get these materials sent over to us from that library, either for borrowing or keeping, in the case of photocopies.
And how long have you been a librarian?
Well, I got my library degree back in 95, but I'm not actually working as a librarian right now. I'm just the coordinator for Interlibrary Loan right now. But I've been working in the department since 1989. I've been at the library since 1984.
That's amazing. So I guess the question that I want is, what's the difference between being a librarian or acting in the capacity of a librarian versus what you do right now?
Librarian, it just generally means you have the degree of library science, master's in library science, which I do have. The position I have is actually a senior library technician, and I run this little program because we don't have a librarian in our department. The parent department I'm attached to does have librarians available if I need one, but generally most of the work can be taken care of by my technical staff.
Okay, well, let's start with, so Thanksgiving has come and gone, thankfully. And now December is nipping at our heels. And I know the library always has something for every single month. So what's coming up in the month of November, in the month of December that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think the most interesting or most popular, at least at the main library, is our holiday train display. We have a miniature train and a setup with little houses and ski lift, and you can press buttons and make all the actions happen. The kids love it, and it goes on right above our head so we can hear it all day long, but it is really popular. The library has a constant floating change of materials. We don't have anything specifically that I'm aware of for Christmas, but we always have holiday events and our usual author talks, and various affinity groups meet in our library, and all these events are available to the public.
Okay, how long has the train been a fixture at the library?
Boy, maybe 20, 25 years. It started out as a small kind of staff in created event, and it's become so popular that we now have a very formal setup. People donated a lot of the equipment and the parts to make the display, the little houses and things and various trains. It must have started around the time Harry Potter was very popular, because it originally was called the Hogwarts Express display, and now it's just called the Holiday Train. I'm sure there was some copyright issue.
Okay, so that sounds great. One of the questions that I have about the library in general is that there's like a million programs, and you can, if you don't know that those programs are there, you wouldn't even know to look for them there. So what would you say, Eric, as for you, are some of the programs that you wish people knew more people knew about?
Well, I wouldn't say there's any specific program I like them to know about. I would recommend checking our website. We do have all our events listed there, and we have our monthly newsletter, which is at the public library, which really is very in-depth, because I'm at the main library, so we have our own events. Each branch has their own event as well, and I'm not always familiar with what specific a smaller branch is going to have a locally popular event, as opposed to the main library, which we tend to get more of the big authors and the movies that are shown. Those tend to be at the main library, so we have the larger events. But there's a lot of community-oriented things, gardening, and I mean, just a variety. Every time I read the newsletter, I'm amazed at what we actually offer for a public library.
So when you're not being a librarian, what are some of the services at the library that you personally use?
I do read a lot. I think most people who work at the library are probably interested in reading, so it's very nice. And then I work in interlibrary loan, so I see a lot of material that we don't actually have. I borrowed it from another library, so when it comes back, I said, oh, I'm going to read that particular interesting item. But we have a tremendous, you know, magazine collection. If you're looking for periodicals, journals, it just covers every topic, and I'm a regular reader of a lot of, I like short material, so nonfiction articles, short stories, things along those lines.
So as a librarian, does that mean you have like stacks of books next to everything that you live near that you're planning on reading?
Oh, yes. I have at home, I have one at my living room table. I have two more probably at my bedroom. At work, there's three or four that I'm reading constantly. It's just If I'm in a certain location, I'm reading that particular item. When I'm somewhere else, I'm reading that other thing, and I can switch back and forth. It's just, it's reading is a major part of my personal pleasure life.
I saw that there's a Japanese word for the pleasure that you get of having books that are waiting to be read. I don't remember what that word is, but I was excited that such a word existed.
I'm impressed there's a word too. I just came back from Japan a few weeks ago, and I would wish I had known that. But I always have five or six things that are waiting to be read.
Okay, so for the month of December, is there any particular program that you want to make sure our listening audience knows about?
I wasn't prepared for that. I was really focused on talking about interlibrary loan. So again, I would just recommend checking our website or checking the at the public library. There are a variety of things all the time.
Okay, well then let's talk about interlibrary loan. So how does it work if you there's a material that you want and the library doesn't have it? What's the process for getting it?
Yeah. Okay, through our website, there's a link at the bottom of the catalog page that says Interlibrary Loan, and it'll give you the option of choosing a book request, a photocopy request, or a microfilm request, and you determine what format it is, and then you supply us some basic information, at least author and title would be really nice, and then from that point, we will run it through a national database and determine who owns this particular material. And then we will contact them electronically and say, hey, can you lend us this material? And usually within 2 or 3 days, they'll get back to us. If they say yes, it'll be shipped off to us, and we usually receive it in about a week. If they say no, it'll bounce off to the next library that we've selected in the chain. We send it to several libraries at a time, and it sort of bounces from one library to the next. If it's a really new book, it may be a little bit more difficult because they're very popular at their libraries as well. We can't tell when we're searching these databases if the item is actually available to be checked out. It simply says the library owns it, so we ask them if they can lend it. We do fill about 90% of our requests, which is pretty good. It's very rare we can't find an item. Some items we just never have been able to locate anywhere. We find references to it, but not a particular item. But most of the time, we can obtain the material. The most common reason for not filling it is because it's in use at the libraries who own it, and we just tell the patrons, try again in a month or two, and we can see if we can get it at that point. But we get material on every topic. Going back, probably we go back to about 1800. It's very difficult to obtain materials prior to that date because they're usually technically rare books and nobody's going to lend that material. But we get plenty of material from the 1800s, the early 1900s, that simply most public libraries don't have, or if they had it, they no longer have it because it's been damaged or lost or stolen or however, and so we can see if we can borrow another copy for it. It's a tremendous service. It gives you an extra layer after exhausting our very extensive collection. And we have two parts of our service. There's the Link Plus, which is a primarily California, 70 California libraries are all networked together, and we can often get a book in 2 or 3 days from that service. If it's not available there, we try the larger interlibrary loan national service, and we may go as far as the East Coast for something. The Library of Congress is a regular supplier of our materials.
That reminds me, I was in D.C., and because I here in San Francisco, I was like, oh yeah, of course they'll be open on the weekends because it's a national. I was shocked and appalled that we have a superior library system that's open. Like, I couldn't go on a weekend to look at my, to get materials. And I feel really spoiled by the San Francisco Public Library.
I would agree with that. Very few places are open 7 days a week like our system is. Almost every location is open till 8 or 9 o'clock several nights a week. We are one of the better funded libraries. The taxpayers of San Francisco have spoken a number of times to make sure the library is well funded. And the trade-off, of course, is we expand our hours whenever we can.
So for people who there's materials that they want, but maybe they are computer challenged. So what can you do for those people? And there are a lot of them.
Well, any request can be made with the assistance of a staff person. So you stop by any reference desk at any location, and the staff can assist you in placing the request. It's really the requests are quite simple. Should just take a few minutes to place a request. And at that point, my department would take over, and then we'd keep trying until we've either obtained the material or run out of options.
Okay. So where is what's it called again, and what floor is it located on?
Well, the Interlibrary Loan Department is based in the main library on the first floor. We're a part of the Borrower Services Department, and that's the location where people do checkouts and check-ins and get library cards and things. We're a member of that larger or parent organization. But anybody can stop in at the main library or give our library a call, and we would be more than happy to answer any questions you have about obtaining material.
Excellent. Well, Eric Vea, is there anything else you think our listening audience needs to know about the library?
You know, we have a tremendous collection. We've expanded our ebooks since the pandemic, when the pandemic started and then has since ended. We've really increased that tremendously. There's so much material available, even without our service. Speak to a staff person. We can obtain amazing amounts of material. So many things have become online. Libraries have digitized collections, especially old journals, old periodicals, old books. All of these things can be obtained electronically and almost instantaneously and generally for free. We don't charge for our services. Some specialty libraries might, if you're looking for a really obscure item, it's a possibility there might be a small charge for reproduction. But otherwise, our free services are really what drives us, and people should really take advantage of it. It's much nicer. May have to wait a little longer than getting it from Amazon, but it's free.
Well, with that, I want to thank you for being on the show today. And the one question I have, so since San Francisco has abolished late fees, if you're borrowing from somebody who's didn't abolish late fees, what happens?
Okay, we don't charge. So if we borrowed the item through Interlibrary Loan or Link Plus, we don't charge overdue fines. The difference is, for San Francisco materials, it'll take 30 days overdue before we put a stop on your account, 10 days for Interlibrary Loan and Link Plus materials. Again, because they're not ours, and we do have an obligation to try to get them back to the lender at the most convenient time possible.
Okay. Well, Eric Vea, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Marilyn. Appreciate it.
And just one thing for our listening audience, and this is something I read a long time ago, which is the internet will give you millions of answers, but a librarian will give you the right one. So go check out the San Francisco Public Library. Well, it's just about time for me to ride off into the sunset. I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. It'll be pleasuring your ear hole. I'm going to play some music for you. But until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.